Public Broadcasting.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up today, we're going to hear another batch, the final batch of candidates who have taken us up on our offer of free airtime. These are all candidates who are on the primary ballot a week from today. Early voting has already started. You can vote by mail, too, already. So many people have already voted. More than a million people here in Florida have already voted. We're going to hear from some candidates who have accepted WMNF's offer of free airtime. WMNF does not endorse candidates, and no money was exchanged for the airing of these announcements. But these are candidates mainly in Hillsborough, Polk, and Pinellas counties who have taken us up on the offer of free airtime. We're going to begin by listening to a candidate for Congress whose district includes parts of both Hillsborough and Polk County.
This is Andrew Larned. I'm a Navy veteran running for Congress in Florida's 15th District. That's the most flippable district in Tampa Bay, and it goes from the city line of Tampa, Progress Village, Temple Terrace, over to Orlando. So you got Plant City, Brandon, Lakeland, all the way to Claremont. I got in this fight a year and a half ago after Trump, on his third day on the job, ordered a mission into Yemen that got one of our guys killed. It was my third deployment to the Middle East, and it was the raid, many of you remember, where he kind of famously took the briefing in a Mar-a-Lago ballroom and set him in a classified setting and then forgot and tweeted the Muslim ban the night before the team went in. I got in this fight back then to hold people accountable, but for a year and a half, I've been campaigning all around the district trying to build this blue wave into what it's become today, showing up for Parkland and the rallies after Charlottesville and everything we've done to put us in this position to flip this seat. This is now one of the most flippable House seats in the country, and it's going to be ground zero for how we're going to hold this administration accountable in November. I'm the candidate in the race that's fighting for Medicare for All, because even though I got in this for my own reasons and to fight for Ryan, you meet people along the way, and there are far too many folks here that don't have access to affordable health care. Small business owners like me that are literally going into credit card debts trying to make payroll and keep this economy moving forward, because there are far too many people at the top that are making it rich while the rest of us are just barely struggling to make ends meet. And we have a fight on our hands. We're going to fight all the way through November. We've done this off of no corporate PAC pledge. We're doing it off no money from Big Sugar. We are just in this fight for folks, because there are too many of us counting on November to hold 45 accountable and to get into Washington and start fighting for working people again. My name, one more time, Andrew Larned. Our website is quite simple, andrewlarned.com. Thanks so much.
Well, that was Andrew Larned, who is a congressional candidate for the Congressional District 15 seat in the Democratic primary. And let's listen now to another candidate. This person is running for judge in Hillsborough County.
This is Jared Smith. I am a judge in Hillsborough County and running for my own seat, County Judge Group 5. I would certainly appreciate your consideration and your vote. I am an Air Force veteran. Having served my country right after 9/11, I felt the call to serve shortly after 9/11 to join the military, gave up my traditional civilian legal career, and within 9 months of 9/11, I was raising my hand to support and defend the Constitution. My first base assignment was MacDill Air Force Base right here in Tampa, Florida, so I've enjoyed serving the active duty and retirees and dependents in the Hillsborough County area for 4 years. After that, I ended up getting out and have been here in the Tampa community essentially ever since. I worked as an attorney in downtown Tampa, became board certified in construction law, and after serving for several years as a construction attorney, felt, again, the call to serve, and now am a Hillsborough County judge, having gone through the appointment process. I do domestic violence court, and I would say most people would say that they get treated fairly in my courtroom. I have the endorsements of many attorneys in the community. I do have the endorsement of the Tampa Bay Times. I have the endorsement of the Florida Sentinel and La Gazzetta, all of which conclude that I'm doing a good job on the bench, and therefore leave Judge Smith on the bench. So I definitely would appreciate your consideration in that, and would appreciate your vote come right now, August and August 28th. Remember to keep Judge Smith. You'll see Judge Jared Smith on the ballot on County Judge Group 5. Thank you so much. Take care. God bless.
That is Jared Smith, who is running for County Judge Group 5 in Hillsborough County. You're listening to Free Candidate Time here on the first part of Radioactivity today on WMNF in Tampa. We'll hear from many more candidates who are on the ballot in Hillsborough, Polk, and especially Pinellas County, so stick around. This next candidate is a candidate for judge also in Hillsborough County.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Robin Fuson. I'm a candidate for Circuit Court Judge, Group 25, right here in Hillsborough County. I've been an attorney in Hillsborough for the last 25 years. I spent 8 years with the state attorney's office, and the last 16 years, I've been in the streets fighting for the rights of people accused of crimes. I'm a lifelong resident of here. I've been married 33 years. I'm proud to say that I've been endorsed by the Tampa Bay Times, the La Gazzetta newspaper, as well as several others, including the AFL-CIO labor unions and all 30 sub-unions for them. If you have any questions about me, feel free to contact me on my website at electfuson.com or follow us on Facebook at Robin Fuson for Judge Facebook. My time here in Hillsborough County has not been wasted just on the legal practice. I've spent 13 years as a professional baseball player. I also worked as a waiter, a bartender. I worked on a road crew, sodding the interstate. I was a dishwasher and a waiter. I've done just about everything you could do to help make ends meet. I know what it means to earn a living wage and how hard it can be on families. So when you take a look at the man or woman who's sitting on the bench, I want you to see someone that reflects you and your community. And I believe that person would be me. With over 25 years as an attorney and 60 years of life experience, I won't disappoint you, and you can count on me to always follow the law, regardless of race, creed, or color. Thank you very much.
Well, that was Robin Fuson, who is a candidate for judge in the Hillsborough County Circuit Court, Group 25. And next, we're going to hear from a candidate. We'll hear their free message for a candidate who is running in House District 61 in Hillsborough County.
Hi, I'm Karen Skyers, candidate for State House District 61. As a mother, I know the challenges of raising children in today's society. As a public defender, I fought for the poor and defenseless who were wrongly accused. And as a legislative aide to Senator Arthenia Joyner, I learned how to use the power of a public official to cut through the red tape and get results for Tampa Bay's working families. As your state representative, I plan on continuing that mission. Change in Tallahassee starts by taking on powerful interests to deliver affordable health care, good jobs that grow our economy, first-rate public schools, and thriving communities. With your vote on August 28th, that change starts here. My contact is KarenSkyers.com. Soy Karen Skyers, candidata para la Baja Cámara aquí en la Bahía de Tampa. Pueden votar por mí on August 28th. Thank you.
That's Karen Skyers, who is running for State House District 61 in Hillsborough County. Next, we're going to hear a message from a candidate who is running for County Court Judge in Hillsborough County.
My name is Adam Banter, and I'm running for County Court Judge, Group 2. While my career of hard work, service, leadership, and expertise makes me the most qualified candidate in the race, it's not why I'm running. I'm running because I believe in a fair and impartial judiciary that treats everyone equally and fairly under the law, regardless of their wealth, race, sex, or any other legally immaterial factor. Also, we need judges who will hear all litigants with respect and patience to ensure that their day in court is meaningful and that they are heard. If your vision is my vision, vote Adam Bantner for County Court Judge. If you want to learn more, you can go to BantnerForJudge.com. And I'm Adam Bantner, and I approve this message.
Adam Bantner, who is a candidate for County Court Judge Group 2 in Hillsborough County. Next, we're going to hear from a candidate for Congress whose district includes parts of Hillsborough County, but also a major portion of northern Pinellas County and also Pasco County.
Hi, I'm Chris Hunter, and I'm running for Congress against Gus Bilirakis. I served our country and our community as a federal prosecutor with the United States Department of Justice and as a special agent with the FBI. I'm running for Congress to serve you. American service is an enduring promise that crosses generations, connects us to one another, and inspires hope. When we serve our country and one another, we put our shared American values into action. I believe that public service is a privilege. A congressional seat is not an entitlement program for career politicians. It's also not a family inheritance to be handed down. It's time to bring honest leadership and all American service to our district. It's time to have a leader in Congress who will vote for us and not for the PACs. Our campaign website is www.chrishunterforcongress.com. Please join us. Let's renew our shared American values and restore honest American service for all of us. Vote Chris Hunter for Congress. Thank you.
That's Chris Hunter, who's running for Congress in Florida's 12th congressional district. That includes parts of Hillsborough, Pasco, and Pinellas counties. And this is WMNF in Tampa. You're listening to something that we do from time to time, and that is offer free airtime to candidates on a first-come, first-served basis. This is the last day that we'll be doing this. And we'll also be opening up the phone lines a little bit later on in the program. This is 88.5 FM. Next up, a candidate for Pinellas County School Board District 3.
Hello, I'm Carl Zimmerman, and I'm a candidate for Pinellas County School Board, Seat 3, countywide. I've been a classroom teacher for the last 33 years, Teacher of the Year six times, including State Journalism Teacher of the Year, and I served in the Florida House of Representatives, sitting on three education committees. But being fresh from the classroom is most important. I'm the only candidate running for this seat that's actually been in the classroom in the last 15 years. That's critical. A lot's changed in education over the years, over testing, teacher evaluations that measure little, an abandonment of an attendance policy, lack of support, overcrowded classes with as many as 40 kids in a class, despite the class size amendment, and an overall disconnect from a school board that thinks everything is fine, despite having five elementary schools labeled failure factories. This is not progress, this is not acceptable, and this is not how we should move forward. This is the result of a school board that's out of touch with what's happening in the classroom, in part because the incumbent in my race has never been a classroom teacher. I want to refocus our sights on making schools more engaging for the students. I want programs that students want to show up for, and I want to provide the support our teachers need to get back to doing what they love most, teaching. I'm endorsed by the Pinellas Classroom Teachers Association, support staff, Pinellas Realtors, the Fraternal Order of Police, and most of the skilled trade organizations, as well as scores of former students. So vote for informed change. This political ad is paid for and approved by me, Carl Z. Zimmerman, for Pinellas School Board, Seat 3. Thank you.
Carl Zimmerman, who is running for Pinellas County School Board, Seat 3. That's a countywide seat in Pinellas County. And just to clarify, no money is being exchanged for these ads, and WMNF is giving free airtime to candidates as a public service, as we've done the last few years. And we are going to continue with about four more candidates who are going to take us up on our offer of free airtime. This is 88.5 FM. Next, we're going to hear from a Hillsborough County Commission candidate in District 7.
This is Sky U. White, and I'm running for Hillsborough County Commissioner, District 7, countywide. I am not a politician. I'm a mother, nurse, and local community organizer that wants to see all of Hillsborough County well represented. As the founder and program director of a local nonprofit organization, I've witnessed many of our residents left out of important decisions that has directly affected them and their communities. Most recently, the plan to build a new stadium in the heart of the historic neighborhood that is being gentrified and aggressively pushing out marginalized residents. We have a transit system that has been in disarray for years, with our most vulnerable residents suffering from its inefficiencies. Our transit system needs to be inclusive. We not only need to focus on having less vehicles on the road, but also need to ensure that we have safe roadways and proper crosswalks for our pedestrians and cyclists. As a mother, medical professional, community organizer, and your next county commissioner, I will always cast my vote for equitable housing and an inclusive transit system. We are a grassroots-driven campaign that is powered by local working-class volunteers. As the first African-American that will be elected to this seat, I'm looking to make changes within our community, work towards building a more diverse local government, and be a strong representative for all of Hillsborough County. In order to do that, I need your support and your vote. To learn more about me, please visit my website at skyuwhite.com, or you can reach me at 813-586-0620. And remember, with your vote, the sky's the limit.
That is Sky U. White, who is running for Hillsborough County Commission District 7. Next up, a candidate for Polk County School Board District 3.
I'm Sarah Fortney, and I'm a real science teacher that knows the real problems in our schools, and I have real solutions. I'm running for District 3 Polk County School Board on experience, relationships, and relevance. Not just my own 33 years of experience, but for all of our dedicated and experienced paras, bus drivers, food service, maintenance, and secretaries. It's time we tapped into that experience and stopped paying high-priced consultants and subcontractors like Airmark. It's time to build relationships in and out of our classrooms that make a positive difference. As a taxpayer, I want every single line item in our $1.5 billion budget to be spent in the most impactful way to enhance the student experience. We must stop this test and punish system that's destroying the profession I love. I started my 34th year as a classroom teacher a week ago. I've advocated for kids, parents, teachers, and support staff my entire adult life. I'm running for Polk County School Board District 3 in order to unite and fight for public education. Please vote for me, Sarah Fortney. Sitting on that board will be my only job. I'm the only candidate that has to resign and give up my career in order to serve the community I've called home for almost 40 years. I'm running for District 3 on the Polk County School Board because I believe we deserve a voice. This is not a stepping stone to a higher office for me. Education has and will be my life's passion. Please look up the Sarah Fortney for School Board campaign on Facebook, Google, and Twitter. I respectfully ask for your vote because a vote for Sarah Fortney will ensure a voice for all stakeholders in Polk County.
That is Sarah Fortney, who is running for Polk County School Board District 3. You're listening to a live program here on WMNF in Tampa. These are actually recorded messages of candidates who have taken up our offer of free airtime to local political candidates who are on the ballot on August 28th. Next up, we'll listen to a message from a candidate who is running in Polk County for School Board District 5.
My name is Jennifer Sabin, and I'm running for Polk County School Board District 5. I'm the only candidate in my race with the history of standing up to the state against high-stakes test-based accountability. Our testing system is not giving us the results that we want, and it's leaving students, teachers, and communities penalized because of test scores. I'm running on a platform of respect, build, and believe. Respect for all of our employees by budgeting salaries first and trusting them to be the professionals that they've been educated to be. Building transparency and community and increasing our level of communication with all of the stakeholders in our district. I also want to build a proactive board that doesn't wait for problems to come to us, but looks for ways to prevent the problems in the first place. And finally, believe. We are required to provide a free and appropriate education for our in our county, and we're not doing that right now. We need to be lobbying the state for more money and making sure our stakeholders all understand the importance of serving children with all abilities. I am Jennifer Sabin, and I'm running for Polk County School Board District 5. I encourage you to reach out on social media. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, or at Sabin2018.com. I also welcome any questions that you may have, and feel free to give me a call even. My phone number is 863-241-7857. I would appreciate your support on or before August 28th. Again, I'm Jennifer Sabin for Polk County School Board District 5. Thank you for your support.
And again, the last day to vote is a week from today. That was Jennifer Sabin, who is running for Polk County School Board District 5. Our next candidate is running for Hillsborough County Commission District 5.
Good morning, listeners. It is a pleasure. I want to let you know this is Elvis Pickett, your candidate for Hillsborough County Commission District 5. That's a countywide seat, which includes everyone in Hillsborough County. I want to stop by to let you know that economic development, quality education, and affordable housing is very necessary. I want to also let you know that transit, we are looking at a transit crisis as well as an affordable housing crisis. Infrastructure has not been to the place where it needs to be in Hillsborough County. And why? Because we must make sure that we hold developers accountable to pay their impact fees. We must raise impact fees here in Hillsborough County to make sure that we have our proper infrastructure to take place. I want to let you know that you have a candidate here that is going to vow and represent the people every day he's in office. You have a candidate here that's going to speak truth to power and make sure things get done. You have a candidate here that want to bring local government back to the people and make sure that we understand that we are only representation of the people's concerns. I want to let you know that with your vote on August 28th, with your vote all the way up for early voting until the 26th, you give me and empower me to speak on your behalf. I'm asking you to do me a favor. Visit our website at www.voteelvis2018.com. And if I have been able to serve 12 years in this community as a local leader, I'm telling you Elvis Pickett is the man. And if you want to win, I'm telling you to put Elvis in, because a vote for me will be a voice for you. It is a critical time in our economy. It's a critical time in our county that we put people in office. Being 30 years old, I can tell you that we are in a crisis because we have neglected the fact to put people first. Let's bring it back to the basis and make sure that you vote for someone that's going to put you first. I thank you so much for your time, and I hope you consider me, Elvis Pickett, on your ballot in 2018.
Elvis Pickett, who is running for Hillsborough County Commission District 5. And our final candidate for this round of elections is a candidate for the Polk County School Board District 7.
Hi, my name is Lisa Miller, and I'm running for Polk County School Board District 7. That's a countywide vote on August the 28th. I believe that regardless of where you're from, what street you live on, or your unique abilities, everyone is entitled to a quality education in Polk County. We must increase opportunities so our students become productive members of society after they graduate, whether they go to college or pursue advanced vocational training. To do this, we must increase support to our teachers in the classroom and advance our vocational programs. We must also remember the people who are not in the classroom but are required for the educational experience to function. That's our bus drivers, our maintenance personnel, cafeteria, and support staff. I know Polk County can become a leader of education in Florida. I will work tirelessly to make sure that educating every student and supporting all staff is a priority. I would be honored to have your vote on August the 28th. You can reach me at 863-698-6240 or my website, lisaforpolkschools.com. Lisa, the number 4, polkschools.com. I have the commitment, knowledge, and energy to put students and teachers first. Thank you.
Lisa Miller, who is running for Polk County School Board District 7. Again, these are not endorsements by WMNF. WMNF just offered airtime, free airtime, to all the candidates who are on the ballot on August 28th, regardless of political party. It was free. No money was exchanged. 25 candidates in all took us up on the offer of free airtime. Thanks to the candidates that did. And we are very likely to do it in October. Just before the November election, the general election. So remember, the last day to vote is a week from today. Early voting is going on. You can vote by mail. And if you want to go to the polls and do it next Tuesday, you can also do that as the final day of the elections. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for tuning in. And Jan Simpson is our phone producer today. We're going to open up the phone lines, take your phone calls. We're going to talk about items in the news. The number to call, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. I'm going to suggest some items that we could talk about, and then let's see where you want to take the conversation. It's not been a good year for manatee deaths in Florida. According to state wildlife statistics, there have been more manatee deaths so far this year than all of last year. The two major causes, a cold snap and also the toxic red tide algae. Microsoft says it's uncovered new Russian hacking attempts targeting political groups, this time targeting conservative groups. The two targeted conservative groups are the Hudson Institute and the International Republican Institute, allegedly targeted by Russian hackers. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. And a judge in Tallahassee is throwing a proposed amendment dealing with charter schools off the November ballot. The judge ruled yesterday the amendment proposed by the Constitution Revision Commission is misleading and does not tell voters what it really does. Federal investigators are looking into allegations of rape, assault, and smuggling of drugs into a Central Florida prison near Ocala, the Lowell Correctional Prison near Ocala. There is an open federal civil rights investigation. And Florida corrections officials say they don't tolerate abuse and welcome the investigation. The federal investigators are examining whether the Florida Department of Corrections ignored complaints of misconduct. A Florida candidate for agriculture commissioner says her bank, the Wells Fargo Bank, terminated her campaign account because she supports medical marijuana. Democrat Nikki Fried said yesterday that the banking giant started asking questions about her platform after she joined the statewide race and asked, does she advocate more access to medical marijuana and would she accept contributions from medical marijuana lobbyists? And after answering apparently yes to those questions, Wells Fargo terminated her campaign account. She's running for agriculture commissioner, and again, her name is Nikki Fried. A federal judge in Seattle is scheduled to hear arguments on whether or not to block a settlement for the U.S. Between the U.S. State Department that it reached with a company that wants to post blueprints for printing 3D plastic weapons on the Internet. The federal government had tried to stop a Texas company from releasing the plans online, arguing it violated export regulations, but the government reversed itself 2 months ago and entered an agreement with the company that allows it to post the plans for plastic guns online. 19 states and the District of Columbia sued and last month secured a restraining order to stop that process, and now they want to make that restraining order permanent. If the stock market doesn't drop significantly tomorrow, the bull market is poised to break the record as the longest in U.S. history of in the history of U.S. trading. That's 9 years of a bull market on Wall Street. And they tore down a Confederate statue yesterday called Silent Sam on the campus of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. It was toppled by protesters. And it began last night as a demonstration, and then at about 9 o'clock, Silent Sam was taken down. The statue was given to the university by the United Daughters of the Confederacy in 1909, 44 years after the end of the Civil War. The chancellor of the university has said that it was not up to them to tear down the statue. Here's UNC freshman Melinda McCabe saying she and her fellow students approved of tearing down the statue.
I'm absolutely disgusted by those who feel that they can stifle the youth's voices, because it is our constitutional right and responsibility to show not only Chapel Hill, not only North Carolina, but the entire country and the entire world what the youth of today really, really want. And we want equal rights, and we want to get rid of monuments to the Confederacy.
And Afghan police say the Taliban have fired rockets toward the presidential palace in Kabul today as the president, Ashraf Ghani, was giving a holiday message for the Muslim celebrations of Eid al-Adha. No injuries were reported. The attack drew a ferocious aerial response from the Afghan government, which bombed a house where the rockets were reportedly launched. Well, Afghanistan is in the news there are now calls on the president's favorite TV network to privatize the U.S. war in Afghanistan. Eric Prince, the founder of one of the largest private military contractors in the world, wants to privatize part of the operation in Afghanistan. And to do that, he's been making the rounds. He's been writing op-eds for major newspapers. He's also appeared on the major networks, and he made a major push on the Fox News network yesterday with an interview with Brian Kilmeade.
This October will mark 17 years since the beginning of the U.S. military operations in Afghanistan after the 9/11 attacks, a conflict that many experts say is still far from winnable. But our next guest is urging the president to rethink his strategy and replace U.S. military personnel with a smaller group of civilian contractors and special forces operators in the civilian world. So, could this shakeup finally turn a page in America's longest war? Here to discuss is former Navy SEAL and founder of Blackwater USA, Eric Prince. Eric, welcome. Good to see you.
Thanks, Brian.
We talked about this about a year and a half ago. The president sent in more troops. And what's the result been?
Today marks the day that the president really took ownership of the war, because today is the day that he announced more money and more troops that the Pentagon asked for. And since then, we've had more loss, more Americans dead, tens of thousands more Afghans dead, and another $62 billion in spending, and it's not working.
Well, he has put in more troops in there. They have changed the rules of engagement. Are you saying it's not as effective?
Not as effective. Even last week, there was four simultaneous attacks across the country. They wiped out 350 Afghan security forces, severed the North-South Highway. It is a continuous litany of death and failure. What we're encouraging the president to do is to go back to what worked after 9/11. Before the big conventional forces rolled in, when you had a few special forces, a few CIA officers, backed by air power, and they decimated the Taliban in a matter of weeks.
But they did not hold territory.
They held a lot of territory, and there was no sanctuary for the Taliban. All we're saying is, and it's not a privatization, it's really a rationalization. Right now you have 15,000 U.S. troops and 30,000 contractors. By going back to a small footprint that worked, you put mentors, okay, basically special forces veterans that right. go back as contractors and attach to each Afghan unit. They live with, train with, and fight with. You support them with air power that shows up reliably, which is not the case now.
Saying our air power doesn't get called in reliably?
Look, even in the last week, there was multiple Afghan units that were surrounded and annihilated, waiting for air power for 3 and 4 days. Not getting medevac, not getting resupplied, not getting bombs dropped in the bad guys.
I want you to take a look at an Afghanistan map we put together that shows Taliban-controlled areas as well as government-controlled areas, and it's shaded appropriately. So it looks as though, if you look at some of the red areas, contested territory, Afghan government territory is in the gray, and then you have Taliban-claimed territory in the orange. Does this look like a standoff to you?
It's worse than a standoff. We're spending $62 billion. The Taliban is spending a micro fraction of that, and we're losing. Remember, the 9/11 attacks cost $500,000. We're spending $62 billion. The Taliban is making at least $600 million in illegal drugs and in illegal mining sales. So they have more than enough resources to perpetuate this, to keep the sewer of terrorism going.
You have a lot of skeptics out there. John Bolton is not one of them. He's open to it. Listen.
Do you consider privatizing there with using contractors instead of U.S. military? Well, there have been some reports about that this week.
There are always a lot of discussions. I find them helpful. I'm always open to new ideas.
Have you met with him? Is he open?
Not yet. Here's the thing. A year ago, the National Security Advisor was a 3-star Army general who wanted a 4-star, and the idea of him doing anything unconventional was impossible. Now, perhaps there's more openness to it. It's the NSC's job to provide the president with options, and the president should appoint a special envoy, someone that's like a bankruptcy trustee, because if you can't call almost $2 trillion in spending and 17 years of losses to the Taliban, a bankruptcy situation, I don't know what is. If he appoints a special envoy, one person that the president can hold in charge, give them the Title 50 authorities, like when he went in after 9/11, that was the agency with the military supporting the CIA that worked.
So you believe you have the men and women right now. They are members of NATO, NATO nations, and Americans.
U.S. or NATO.
Correct. You have them on the roster?
The plan would send U.S. Special Forces veterans and NATO combat veterans back into Afghanistan, because we fixed the continuity issue. Right now, for the last 17 years, the U.S. has sent units that deploy there for 8 months. They spend a couple months getting to know the area. They're productive for a few months. They spend the last 2 months getting ready to go home and making sure everyone is safe. They lift that unit up, send it back, send a new one in, and repeat. We've done that 30 times now, so there is no continuity. Going to a mentor contract model, I can put that same guy in there for years at a time, in the same valley with the same unit. They know the terrain, they know the locals, and they build the confidence
in
the local
units. How much does it
cost? It costs about 15% of what we're spending now.
All right, I want you to hear what Senator Lindsey Graham told me last night. The consequences of withdrawing American forces to be replaced by mercenaries would be equal to President Obama's ill-advised pulling of American troops from Iraq. No matter how you spin it, such a decision would be seen by the terrorists as America cutting and running, and seen by our allies as America abandoning the fight. Your reaction, Eric Prince?
The military-industrial complex is real, okay? The very unhealthy loop of massive spending on the Pentagon into wasteful wars recycled back into political campaigns is a problem on both right and left. The president rightly campaigned on ending endless wars. This is America's longest war. It's the first time we've had the kids of soldiers now fighting, kids that were toddlers when the towers fell here in New York,
right,
now fighting
and
dying.
How long would it take you to win?
Winning looks like a long-term presence in a descending layer, on a descending scale. So it's a year and a half to 2 years of continued structural support. If you turn, look, Afghanistan has significant natural resources. The Taliban is making money from it. None of the legitimate miners are. You set security in those areas, you can actually turn on those parts of the economy. Sadly, the Soviet Union did a much better job of developing the economy, the oil and gas and the resources there. Afghanistan is sitting on huge amounts of rare earth elements, which is what's needed for the American manufacturing industry,
right,
especially in high-tech sectors.
So they'd have some type of economic
But you have to set security long enough to do that.
A year ago you pitched it. They didn't take it. We'll see if the president takes your offer now. Eric Prince, thanks so much.
You bet.
All right.
All right, so there's Eric Prince, one of the owners of one of the largest private military companies in the world, suggesting that the war in Afghanistan should be privatized and that it could be won in 1.5 to 2 years. What do you think? Here's our phone number, 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. Prince, do you trust Eric Prince? You think that he would be a good one to run the war in Afghanistan? He talked about wasteful wars and the military-industrial complex. He talked about President Trump campaigning to end endless wars. He said he could do this for 15% of current spending. What do you think? 813-239-9663. If you were watching the Fox show, you saw the map that they put up of the area that's controlled by the Taliban, area controlled by the government, and area that's disputed. The government controls a tiny area of Afghanistan after America's longest war, 17 years. Prince himself said the war cost $2 trillion. His company has probably made some money from that. What do you think the U.S. should do in Afghanistan? And do you trust Eric Prince, the private contractor, to find a solution to the war? 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. It's often not talked about. It should be talked about because the U.S. spends a huge amount of money on its military. What do you think? Do you trust Eric Prince? 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. And what should the U.S. do in Afghanistan with 15,000 U.S. troops still stationed there? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Bill in Homosassa. Bill, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Well, Eric Prince, as far as I'm concerned, failed before Dick Cheney got rich, and that's about where we're headed now. I wonder what the Trump family interest is in Blackwater? Is what the name of that company is?
Yeah, that was the old name.
Oh, now it's new.
Yeah, he's got a new name.
That.
Yeah.
No, I don't trust him. None. That's nothing but another privatization of our government. They want, in a way, I understand that he wants to keep how many thousand American troops there.
Well, he didn't answer that question. That question didn't come up. He said he wanted to take experienced military people, contractors, mentors, veterans, and put them, station them in Afghanistan on the ground with the people in the countryside. And instead of stationing them there for 2 years or a short term for 1 year, he wanted to keep them there for years as private contractors living with the people.
They had an interview with that guy on, I don't even know what station it was, I watched it the other day. Seemed to me like he wanted to keep 30,000 people there that he's going to manage. The cost is some $100-some billion a year that we're spending, and he said he could cut her down to a share of $54 billion a year with, I don't know how many, less than 3,000 that I heard him mention he was going to put in there to, or maybe less than that, Rob. But it's pathetic, the numbers they're putting out on this mess. And my opinion is, we all just close the door and let them guys have that mess. Nobody has ever went to that country and done anything with it, ever.
All right, Bill, thanks a lot.
Time.
Thanks for starting the conversation.
Thank you.
Bill, thank you. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Gino in Tampa. Gino, what do you think about Eric Prince's idea to privatize the war in Afghanistan?
Well, actually, I wanted to mention a couple of things. You talked about a couple of things, actually. One thing was I just read an article on
some guy who was a Nazi guard, and they found him living in, recently found him living in Queens, but they can't deport him because of no country will take him back.
No, he was deported this morning.
Oh, he was this morning?
He was deported this morning, yeah.
Okay, and another thing was actually about the prison. I actually did some internship and some work at that prison because I worked in the Department of Corrections for 10 years before moving to this area. And I worked there, and I believe what's going on there. They say they welcome investigations. What they usually do is once they find out there's an investigation going on in the Department of Corrections, they get all their ducks in a row before the investigation. See, they always told them prior to anyone, secretary coming to the Department of Corrections or to that prison, they would get their stuff in order. Instead of just showing up, they get their stuff in order. But I believe everything that's going on, because I worked for them for 10 years.
And the federal investigators are looking into whether the Florida Department of Corrections ignored complaints of misconduct by prison staff, and the complaints include rape, assault, and the smuggling of drugs into Lowell Correctional near Ocala. Do you have any firsthand knowledge of that?
Sure. I mean, I used to actually work across the street at Million. The manager's across the street. Now, I did some work at that prison, Lowell. I did some work there. I was actually a drug counselor there. And so I was going back and forth, and I did some work at Lowell also, too. Now, at one time, believe it or not, in the prison, they didn't have a fence around it. You know, it sits right there by 75.
Mm-hmm.
So the women would just walk off the compound and catch a truck. They're catching a Detroit somewhere. But they put a fence around it. Now, this was many years ago that I used to work at those prisons. The last one I worked there was 20 years ago, and that was Gainesville Correctional. But I worked at Marion and Lowell and Rayford and Gainesville Correctional. So I did my little round for 10 years.
Yeah, you've seen them all. All right, Gino, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for your phone call. Good to hear from you. 813-239-9663. Adam writes this: I agree that we shouldn't be wasting so much money on war. However, Eric Prince just wants us to waste money on his private contractors instead. Look at his track record. When the company was called Blackwater, that should tell you all you need to know, writes Adam. Yeah, I'll just read a little bit from a NBC website. Prince's close ties to the United Arab Emirates, as well as the record of Blackwater, most notably in Iraq, would likely raise objections among administration officials and the members of Congress. In 2007, Blackwater security contractors escorting a U.S. embassy convoy killed 17 civilians in Baghdad's Nisour Square. One employee was convicted of first-degree murder, and three were convicted of manslaughter, but their verdicts were overturned in 2017. The use of private security contractors in U.S. military conflicts has been controversial, including in Afghanistan. Former Afghan President Hamid Karzai curtailed the use of security contractors, a policy the current government would have to undo for a plan like the one proposed by Prince to be implemented. One of the objections by Karzai was that private contractors who killed civilians were not being held accountable. He wanted them held accountable, otherwise he didn't want them in his country. Wendell writes this: there is only one word that describes how a privatized war could be successful. It would be genocide. Privatized war will never be diplomatic. It will just be a massive slaughter, writes Wendell. Yeah, you know, it's interesting to hear Eric Prince talk, because of the one time he decries the cost of war, and on the other hand, he wants to continue it. 813 anonymously writes, Prince is a lying sack of blank. Once private contractors are employed, those costs no longer appear as military expenditures and are hidden from the public, writes Anonymous. Let's go to Dave in Newport Richey. Dave, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. I didn't hear that entire interview with Prince, but so the question might have been asked. But my question is, isn't this the same company that was guilty of committing atrocities in Iraq, shooting up intersections?
Yeah, I just read that. I just read that on the air. You must have missed that too.
My question is, who's accountable for that? I mean, with the U.S. military, not to say that's not going to happen, probably does, but at least there is a hierarchy of accountability there. I don't see where it is with a private company.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think of his claim that he could do the job and finish the war in 1.5 to 2 years at 15% of the cost?
He's got no incentive to finish the war. I mean, and you can kind of hear him say it, too. He said victory is a permanent presence there. It seems to me there's no incentive to finish it. I mean, war is a tool of politics, frankly, and if you're going to achieve your objective, I think at some point you have to be able to say to your enemy, look, we got to sit down and figure this out. It's either total annihilation or you have to sit down and negotiate a settlement. And the what little history I've read of Afghanistan is that in the one period in its history where there was peace among tribes there, there was a British diplomat who had succeeded in building political connections among many of the tribal leaders. And he was successful in going from tribe to tribe and sort of negotiating differences and kind of keeping a lid on the differences. And when he died, it blew up. And it seems to me that you got that same problem there. And just inserting mercenaries into the country to go after people is never going to stop warfare in that part of the world. You got to have another approach. It's got to involve politics. And paid mercenaries aren't any good at that.
And President Trump said that he wanted to bring this war to a close. He doesn't like endless wars. That's what President Trump campaigned on. Do you think that we're any closer now that President Trump has been in office for a while to the end of the Afghan war?
I don't see it. He seems completely ill-equipped to pursue a smart political agenda aimed at ending warfare in that part of the world. I think it's way beyond him. I think he's out of his depth when it comes to that sort of thing.
All right, Dave, thanks a lot. Thanks for your call. We got an open line you'll be able to get through pretty quickly, 813-239-9663. And you're listening to 88.5 FM, WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Lurie. Thanks for tuning in. You know, a group of Afghan journalists just came through the station last week, and there were about six or seven journalists, mainly based in Kabul, who were in the group. And we were talking about that, and they talked about U.S. security. They were pretty much in favor, I think, of the U.S. military mission there. But one thing that they said that just was very interesting to me is that in all those years that the U.S. has been there, there's been relatively small accomplishments when it came to the infrastructure. And as they were driven around Tampa and St. Petersburg about a week ago, and what they noticed most and what they spoke to me most about, what they noticed the difference between us and Afghanistan is the infrastructure, is the amount of money that our government, our state, local, county, city governments have spent on infrastructure. They say your road system is fantastic, and that's what they want. Yet, you know, for whatever reason, as fast as Kabul is growing, for whatever reason, that infrastructure has not been put in place. And that was one of the things they envied the most about the U.S. Maybe not so surprising. Let's go to Andy in Dunedin. Andy, you're on. What would you like to say?
Maybe if they saw the lack of spending on our old infrastructure, they might think about it a little deeper.
Well, we could stand some spending on our infrastructure, couldn't we? Yeah.
Yeah, the company formerly known as Blackwater, formerly known as C, and formerly known as this, that. It's like a shell game with these guys. But Eric Prince doesn't have a great track record to stand on. I was going to mention before you did about the atrocities over there and the lack of accountability, which just, it's disgusting because I tell people, you know, if we went over and bombed some country, some crazy person here, and then they sent over a military, and they started bombing and shooting our country up, I think we would take up arms against them. And people seem to think the ones that take up arms against our military over there that's destroying everything in sight, that they're somehow, you know, these radical extremists when they're really just regular people trying to you know, save their country and their families. But we've got no business in Afghanistan, just like Russia didn't have any business. You can't go over to a country that's been there for thousands of years and expect to come out clean. They're just going to kick your butt. And the money we're spending there is just, it's obscene, and I can't see giving my hard-earned money to some contractor like this guy and, you know, hoping he can do better. That's a pipe dream. Did you catch at the end there when he said, yeah, they've got a lot of stuff that we could use over here, the minerals and this, that, and the other. So it's
the real reason.
Layers like an onion, and you see what they're going for.
The real reason, yeah. Andy, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, good to hear from you. And here's an email from James. He writes, look what money gets you. The DeVos family gives $200 million or more to Republicans. Betsy is now the Trump education secretary, and she wants to privatize education, and her brother now wants to privatize the military. That's feeding the swamp monsters, writes James. So, James, thanks for that. Thanks for your comments. 813-239-9663 is our phone number, and let's go to Tom in Parrish. Tom, what would you like to say?
Good morning, sir. Well, the previous caller pointed out the connection to the Prince family and Betsy DeVos, but I do remember reading several reports back years ago when this mess started that, you know, we're paying our military people on the average about $100 a day, and at the time, Blackwater was billing us at $1,222 per man per day, and they had thousands of them over there. And the guys that were in Katrina in Louisiana, who were from Blackwater, were bitching that they were only making $600 a day, and they wanted to go back to Afghanistan and Iraq, where they were making a lot more money. So privatization is always profit for somebody. And
how can a guy like Prince afford to pay those kind of sums to a private contractor, and we can't?
He didn't pay him. We did. We paid him
exactly.
That
yeah,
per man.
Right.
Each man didn't get that. He gets his cut. You know.
Because I tell this story a lot. I was at International Mall about 2 or 3 years ago, and I went to the information stand, and a guy was helping me out. And I said, "What do you do? Do you work at the information stand the whole time?" He said, "No, this is my second job. I'm in the military. This is my part-time job to make a little bit of extra money, because the money I make in the military isn't enough for me to feed my kids, and I've got a wife and kids." And I just wonder, you know, if Prince can pay, you know, via the taxpayer, a lot of money. Why can't our military bring at least, you know, for the enlisted personnel, the pay rate up if we're spending all this money?
Well, because that would defeat the privatization, which is the military-industrial complex, which is Eric Prince, which he just railed against, you know. So he's part of that machine.
Yeah, he's speaking out of both sides of his mouth, isn't he?
Absolutely. I mean, the Prince family didn't get to be billionaires by doing things for people, you know.
Yeah.
So,
all right, Tom, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for your shirt.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that, too. Thank you. Okay. Let's go to Jeb and Brandon. Jeb, you're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
You know, basically, I didn't get to hear all of the interview, but, I mean, everything Eric Prince says is absolutely fatuous. I'm not really sure why we're taking him as a credible source in anything, given the fact that he's perjured himself before Congress at least twice. But, you know, his strategy doesn't exist. I mean, I don't know what his strategy is. If you're going to articulate a way of pacifying a country, you're going to have to commit to something. And so far, it seems to be putting experts on the ground and then hoping something changes. Even then, the experts that he's putting them on the ground for too short a duration. He's saying 1 to 1.5 years is going to fix that. If you listen to the testimony of people who've been in country in Afghanistan, much like the testimony of people who are in country in Vietnam, it takes about a year for you to actually understand the local situation that you're a part of and to and to gain the trust of people on the ground who are interacting with you to acclimate to the, you know, the new policies being promoted by the Afghanistan government in conjunction with the United States. 1 year isn't going to do that, because you have to be there to prove your bona fides, to prove your faith and commitment to this change, because they've watched us now. Just as the Vietnamese watched us change our strategy every few years, say, we're going to try doing this, it didn't work, we're going to try doing something else. The people who commit to that get abandoned, they get exposed, they face retribution, or they just see that, you know, hey, this commitment wasn't worth it. If we waited for 18 months, the Americans will give up. He doesn't have an answer for that. The only one he does have is that we're going to be willing to pursue the sunk cost fallacy of saying, hey, we'll give some money for this new initiative. Well, it didn't work. Let's try giving it some more money. And we're going to be back here in 5 years saying, how much did we spend? What happened? What do we try doing differently? Because it's going to take 5 years for us to have the political will to say this was a waste of money.
Well, it's been 17 years. So, you know, at some point, somebody's got to say, hey, either, you know, let's get out of there, or let's change our policy 180 degrees, or, you know, let's ramp up the war. But, you know, I'm sure they've been fighting like heck over there. You know, the reason why I played this interview is that it is on the president's official network. It's on the network that he watches the most. So you can bet that the president saw this interview, and it's, you know, the interview is rattling around in his mind right now. Should he privatize? And Prince has also been given spots in the New York Times and USA Today. He's really making a run for it. So I think it's an important thing that we discuss here on WMNF.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. No, and I'm glad that you are. I feel like anytime you hear from Eric Prince, it should be prefaced by, this man is on the record perjuring himself before Congress. So what's he going to do to a radio station? Obviously, the stakes are a little bit less here. He has, or, you know, anybody else he talks to, he has really no reason to be accountable because he hasn't been punished for, you know, his conduct so far.
Yeah. All right, Jeb, thanks a lot. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Jan Simpson's been our phone producer today. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks for